Welcome to Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon, a production of iHeartRadio. Sports fans, golf fans, or just fans, it's episode 15 of Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon. I'm Shane Bacon, joined in the same city, but social distancing a few miles away, Max Homa. Max, what's up?
Dude, not a lot. I would say, as the kids have been saying lately, it's just Groundhog Day. Every yes. day is the same thing. But yeah, doing all right. Making the most of this.
It's warm here, buddy. It is. Dude. It has gotten toasty in Arizona.
We've been playing some golf. I've been hitting a lot of balls. I'm really getting back into it this past week, and I am regretting it. I live here. I moved here a year and a half ago, and last year, fortunately, we were actually playing golf tournaments this time of year, and was not in the heat nearly as much. All of a sudden, now I live here in the summer, and I'm pretty much regretting everything. I wish I would have practiced a lot 3 weeks ago and then just like taking these weeks off, but here we are.
Hopefully it coasted downhill into the first event.
Yes.
If you'd have taken the time off.
Yes.
But I will say I've run into this issue before, and the nice thing about you being here is you are going to transition into it getting really hot, because a couple of years ago it was the Erin Hills US Open. I was in Wisconsin the week it got brutal here. I flew home. It was 122 I landed in Arizona.
It slaps you right.
That is no joke. At least we got a chance to feel 90, 92, 95 before it got to 107. But it's hit me in the face with some bricks, man.
Those are the things that you become a. That's the most Arizona thing you could say. Like, yeah, no, we're lucky we got used to it because it went from like 90 to 92. And we didn't just like jump straight to 115. Like, aren't we so lucky? It's like, yeah, I mean, like, yeah, it still sucks.
it's been. We got this is really specific to Arizona people listening to the podcast, but it got hot fast here, and it actually quote unquote cooled off the last couple of days, at least to the point where, you know, at 7 a.m, I go on a walk with my son and I'm not sweating profusely.
Yes.
Like I just run 5 miles.
It's the little things we appreciate here.
Those are the bonuses. Max, we would be doing this podcast differently if things were different, you know.
I'd be hammered again. I probably would have won again. I'd be back to podcast number 7 or whatever it was that I won't listen to.
This is Sunday of Wells Fargo week. And, you know, I mean, obviously no golf happened this week, and they showed some of the Wells Fargo championships. Unfortunately, there's no re-airing of the 2019, which I wanted to watch in DVR. This is a year since your win. This is a year since your PGA Tour victory. First PGA Tour win. And I just wanted to spend a few minutes kind of walking through the week that was. If you could take us down that road, I wanted to start early in the week, and you just, you know, getting to North Carolina, getting to, you know, Wells Fargo, getting to this event, where you were mentally, where you were with your game, and what you thought might happen considering how you'd been playing.
Yeah, interesting. Speaking of not being able to watch it, one of the reasons we really did want to watch it was this week was because I don't think I've really ever seen it. I've seen some of the highlights, and it also floods back memories of like what actually happened. So instead, we've been spending some time like just talking about the tournament and, you know, kind of reminiscing a little bit. And some of the things that stuck out that I completely had forgotten about. It was the week Avengers Infinity War came out. I was staying by a movie theater and was stoked we got to see that. Went to like a late showing of that. Little things like that. I remember I got there early, had to change hotels on Monday to Tuesday, like had to jump across the street.
What happened with your first hotel?
It was nothing. I just, I come in early. I was trying to save money, I think. And the one hotel was only ready for that one night, and if I went to the other one starting like Tuesday, I could save a bit of coin. Little did I know, man, I could have bought the hotels. But as far as golf game goes, couldn't have felt better. Had a little bit of doubt in some things, but which I will explain right now. We played the Zurich was a week before. Zurich is a team event. My partner, Andrew Putnam, one of the best dudes on the PGA Tour. We played together, and we got a bit of a tough break, although so did half of the field. We had to play because of a weather delay, 36 holes on Friday. And it was the best I've driven the ball and hit the ball really in my life. More, even better than at the Wells Fargo the following week. And you know, I really had a good swing thought. I really had found it. Putting's okay, nothing bad, nothing good. Short game was, you know, not great, but the general idea was, man, I'm playing some great golf. And I mean, I know Andrew said this after. Andrew didn't play awesome. We hung in there. We should have played better, but both of us got absolutely exhausted on the last five. I mean, I made my worst swing of the week by far on Friday on the 17th hole. I pulled a 7-iron in the water. And, you know, looking back on it, I thought I did a good job of at least telling myself, like, yo, man, like, it was the 35th hole. It's not exactly cold in New Orleans. So we were both bummed out because we both felt good about our chances. Andrew was putting the lights out of it. I was driving it well. Like, we were going to be a great team and we don't get to do it. So I leave the week a little bummed that I miss a cut. And at that time, you know, I haven't had a ton of great finishes. I had a top 10 and like a 26, but it's not like I was rolling out, you know, good finishes, but I was playing great golf. And that's the hardest thing about golf was to remind myself, and you know, that just because the finishes weren't coming, but it was a little demoralizing not making the cut when you feel like you played some of the best golf you've probably ever played. So, you know, but that's you know, that's what happens when you play 36 holes in one day. Like, it just, right. It's hard to keep it, you know, as good as well as you're playing. It's just hard to not get a little bit tired. And I did. So I go to the next week confident because I had a very singular swing thought. I really started to feel like I was thinking a lot less, you know, all this stuff.
What was the swing thought? Do you remember what the swing thought was?
I still work on it now. I was really working on turning my left hip out of the way, which is something I still work on because I'd like to do, I think what the smart swing people say is early extension, but I like to pop up and stand up. And what happens is it makes it a lot like a little bit of a flip at the bottom. And I had really committed to only cutting my driver to kind of help myself along this process. And this is a basically, you know, in the past month or two of, you know, before the Zurich, this is when, you know, all the stuff I'd worked on with my coach Les, like all of it started to come to a head a little bit, where I felt like every week I went to a tournament, I was finally had like one swing thought and like what I really knew exactly how I was going to play the golf course, just as far as like where the ball was going to, how the ball was going to fly. I was going to play a cut even on certain holes when it was a dogleg left. And, you know, maybe I picked my places to hit a draw, but for the most part, I felt like I wasn't doing what I had done for probably honestly 4 years in a row, which every week it felt like I would get off the plane and then have to find a new swing thought or something that would work, a little Band-Aid, as they say. And this time I started to feel like we were finally getting to tournaments where we were talking less. I was just doing what we've been doing and it felt good. So I go into Wells Fargo feeling good about that, but obviously still not so stoked that I haven't freaking done a thing. But we played practice round. I remember Gary Woodland stood me up on the back nine. Kind of just kidding. He was supposed to play with me and there was a wait and I had literally woke up at like the crack of dawn to play. And I turned down like other people to play because I wanted to play with Gary. Gary's, you know, the man, and like just an unbelievable golfer. I love playing with, you know, the best people I could play with in a practice round. And, you know, Joe is really good friends with his caddy Butchie. And I remember we played by ourselves. I'm turning down games. I'm turning down like fun. And I go grind it out slow as can be. And we get to nine fairway and Gary, you know, we get a text from Gary or Butchie or something. And they're like, hey, you know, it's slammed on the 10th tee. We're not going to go. I'm like, I just played this whole thing by myself. Like, this sucks. So I remember that. But I remember I was playing good. I remember, you know, I didn't have a lot of worries about the game, but you never know. You're playing a big golf course. So, you know, leading into it, I felt confident and it's a comfort level. Professional golf and golf in general, when you walk to the golf course and you have a swing thought in your head, or it doesn't have to be a swing thought, you have a shape that you know you're going to be able to control. You have little things. It just, you know how it is. You just like it, you walk differently. You there's very little indecision in anything you're doing. The only crazy part of the week, to be honest, was I changed from putting with a line to no line for the whole week. Joe had been kind of begging me to do it for a while, and I finally
the line on the ball you're talking
about. Yeah, line on the ball. I usually line my ball up and putt it unless it's a really long or really breaking putt. And we were screwing around with it on the putting green. I just hadn't really made a lot of putts, but I thought it was rolling okay. And he had always kind of pushed me to do this. I'd done it one other time when I won. It's never been something I've been able to sustain, but I go back and forth to it here and there. And I went and I remember, you know, I hadn't done it in 5 years. And on the very first hole, I hit a good drive, good second shot, 20 feet, left myself like 2 feet coming back maybe. And I went no line, putt it, made it or whatever. And walking off the green, Joe said, man, you must feel pretty comfortable. Cause like, you know, first hole, 2 feet, 3 feet, go no line. And I said, yeah, man, I actually feel pretty good about it. And like, obviously the rest of history, I had the best putting week of my life. But that was the only really crazy thing. The game was obviously in a good spot, but it's nice going into tournaments and venues that you really enjoy where you do have a good feel for what you're going to do.
Yeah, I just wanted to run through your year in 2019 leading up to Wells Fargo. You talked about, you know, not having amazing finishes, but having solid ones. You finished T26 at the Waste Management, T10th at Pebble Beach, T37th at the Genesis, T20 at Honda. You missed the cut at Valspar, T52nd in Punta Cana, T42nd in Valero, and then you mentioned the miscut at the Zurich. I have an aside I wanted to ask, and I feel like I've heard players talk about this, but you know, this is your podcast, so I just wanted to hear how it really works. How do the Zurich teams match up? How do you get a partner in that thing?
Dude, so like it's kind of tough because a lot of people will have a plan in the beginning of the year to do it. So you can have that angle.
You're saying before the year you have an idea.
Yeah,
of who,
like,
you're
know,
with.
You hear about the team event. I mean, I did it my rookie year. I ended up not being able to play with him because he ended up being in a wedding. But Luke Liss, you know, we got the email that the Zurich's coming out, and he texts me. He's like, "Yo, partners." I'm like, "Heck yeah! Like, let's sign me up." So we do that this time around. I wasn't sure I was going to even play. And then we get closer, and I want to play. And now I don't know if I'm going to be in the event. So
right.
Andrew was not going to play at all. And it ended up that Andrew didn't qualify for the Masters like he had expected to, for the top 50 in the world thing, I think. And he didn't. And then I heard through a little, I mean, Andrew and I are good friends. So I heard through like a little birdie that he wanted to kind of play. And I'd already, you know, kind of been in his ear about it, but now it's like full on, like, Andrew, let's partner. So it's tough. I mean, this year, I didn't plan on playing this year, just because where it lies in the schedule. Get like to Andrew's, original point with the thing, it was like, I'm playing the Masters and I want to play, you know, the couple after. So it's like, that's kind of the one that's the outlier, although it is really fun. So that's how it kind of works. You pick a buddy, but it's
a friend
awkward,
or
yeah, it can be awkward if your friends don't want to play and you do have to ask. Yeah, I think certain sponsors, but like, I mean, shoot, I had a couple people I had been talking to about playing if the season were to start back up at the Zurich. Unfortunately, we didn't, but you know, you start to kind of make plans. But yeah, next year, I mean, if 2020 hindsight for these things, you should do it early so you get the person you really want to play with, because you do, I think, need to vibe hard together. Like, I don't think that you can just like buy on a whim, like partner with somebody and it's going to go well. I think so. I mean, you could play well, but I think to win the thing, you should be pretty friendly, and obviously you want to pick somebody whose game's going to gel with your game.
Who's your best personal friend on the PGA Tour? Like, you're like, I don't want to put you on the spot, but like, you can name a couple, but who is, you know, like somebody you text with and you hang out with away from golf?
Yeah, I mean Joel Damon, obviously.
Okay.
He's one of my best friends. Taylor Gooch is one of my best friends,
right? And, so
like,
let's say Joel.
Them two would be the, yeah, Joel. So Joel had a partner, he was gonna play, right, with Ryan Brehm.
So let's say Joel has asked you to play in the Zurich, okay, and you guys are set, and it is the Friday before
I know where
New
this
Orleans
is going, and I'm bailing on him as hard as possible. Tiger calls, I'm
so
out.
No, no, no.
Peace,
I want to go. What's the cutoff for ditching your buddy? Tiger's a ditch your buddy guy. Is Phil a ditch your buddy guy?
Phil, I mean, probably.
Okay.
Joel and I are good enough friends. Pretty much everybody's a ditcher. He would ditch me in a heartbeat.
Is Rory a ditcher? Is ditcher buddy guy?
Rory's, I'm not even sending a text to Joel. I'm just changing my name off the sheet. He's that guy. No, it is funny. I mean, I've joked around about trying to ask Tiger to be a thing, but you have that inkling in the back of your head. You know, this year was kind of funny because I was playing really well. I was kind of wondering if anybody was gonna reach out and be like, "Hey man, you've been playing really well, you know, you want to be a partner here?" But I was more like joking around with that in my head. But yeah, I don't think I'd leave Joel if Rory, I mean, dude, if the freaking top, you know, if the best player in the world asked me to play, I am just laughing in Joel's face as we lap them on Sunday. Like, I would just be laughing. Now, given that, Joel would probably beat us and whatever, make me feel terrible, but all in good fun. But Joel would do the exact same thing. I think that's where I would cut it off. If the other guy would do the exact same thing to me, because you got to think, we're already good enough friends. I know how he thinks. I know what he's going to do. If he would leave me too, I'm leaving him.
If he calls you and goes, "Yo, Rory wants to play with me in the Zurich," you go, "I got it. I understand."
Yeah, of course.
That.
I'd be like, "Why you just call him back? FaceTime him more. Like, get out of my face."
So you know what? It's interesting. Is this year you are kind of the unknown pickup basketball guy that's team loses, And when the teams got four and they're waiting to see which is the fifth they're going to pick up for their team, you were the guy. You know, you're playing guy. Well. You've been playing solid each and every week, you know, obviously until the tour went away. You were the unknown pickup basketball guy that might have got a call.
Felt good, man. I was the fifth man of the year, I think.
Where are you on the Aeon Risk Reward Challenge list? I mean, yeah. You know, not a lot of guys
what
in the top 10,
bro. What I
should
have done is play with some guys from that were above me.
And then push them to lay up.
Sabotage them. Yeah, sabotage.
Be like, you don't want to go.
No,
that's
or
a great
on alternate
idea.
Alternate shot day, I'd plug them in the bunker. Although I think that would mess me up, too. I'd make sure that their best ball, if their best ball hole, I would make sure that I, like, if we both had, like, 3 feet for birdie, I just scoop his mark and throw it, and I'd make the birdie, so he didn't get the credit for it. I think that would be my angle.
That's a great. See, Jason Day was leading. I think he's leading the Aeon Risk last we checked. I could check it right now, but at this point, it's completely meaningless.
Moot point.
But if Jason Day's doing that, you pair up with him and you go, you know what, Jason, I'm playing the par fives this week, bro. I got the par fives. You got all the other ones. We're good to go. So. You have a good swing thought. You change up a little bit of something in your putting.
Wait,
you
I gotta go back. I love the idea that if I'm playing with Jason Day and somehow he lets me be on his team, I have the balls to tell him what holes I'm playing.
You're like, the I think auto I just alpha.
Follow. Yeah, you just follow what Jason Day says. I think is the way you even be his partner.
Hey, Jason, listen. I know I called you, but listen. Here's the deal. I'm playing the risk reward.
I mean, he won there. Like, he's won that tournament in an individual. I mean, I probably shouldn't be telling him where I think I would my hole should fall.
Hey, your PGA Tour profile page from the Zurich last year, the opening round has you guys shooting 45. Now, can you explain that to me? I don't understand what that is.
I don't
was
know.
It supposed to be 75.
Did we come back like Jordan wearing the 4-5?
Do you understand?
No,
that
we
has
did
you,
shoot 75.
It has you guys as -27 missing the cut.
Damn, what a bummer. we got shafted. We totally should have made the cut.
You know what? You did. You were playing.
I
solid.
Told
you.
You
must have been driving
good,
it great.
Something went wrong.
So you opened the Wells Fargo with 69.
I've been
nice.
Wondering what I shot for. Yeah, nice.
Six,
I've been wondering
69
what I shot.
Opening
200
round.
Par.
Okay, and then just kind of ho-hummy, you play well?
Played well, was again just like, my issue for whatever reason, even now, like made a lot of kind of weird swings, bad mistakes throughout the day, just like, making the most of some bad shots, but these swings are coming out of left field. And it just seemed like it was again, coming off the Zurich, like what the heck, man, like I'm playing better than this. Like the score ended up being fine. I finished well. I remember, I think I made a good par on 17 or something, but like playing better than it never felt easy, which is frustrating because it had been feeling easy golf. It was feeling easier, but the scores weren't like, I wasn't making it look easy, which is odd because you're playing Monday to Wednesday and it feels like cake. That's why the Zurich was, you know, being a team event stinks. Cause I think if I played by myself just for those 2 days, the way I was hitting the ball, I would have had that feeling again where I would have been stringing shots together, where you play alternate shot. Your partner could be never missing a shot, but you never feel the satisfaction of, man, I can't miss, you know, because you're not getting to hit the second one in a row. So yeah, it felt kind of, ho-hum, but like kind of a grind, like gosh, okay. Like this should have been a little bit easier, but still same thing, felt good about a lot of stuff, but the shot seemed to be coming out of nowhere. But yeah, put it together. Obviously 200 out there is always good.
And then comes Friday. Now what's so weird is I felt like in 2020, this season, it's been your Saturdays, right? Haven't Saturdays
been the
dirty round?
Yeah.
This was a dirty Friday round, 63 in the second round. I'm assuming not as ho-hummy as Thursday.
Not very ho-hummy, but sure as hell felt easy. it was just, I mean, you can look at these things so grandiose when you know, you look back on them, and it might not have been, but it did feel like finally, like this is what it's been feeling like for a while, like in my head and at home. It's just like, this is easy. Like golf is easy. I'm seeing shots. I've always seen the golf course really well. I've always just like, big comfortable. I've always, like we were talking about being decisive, I've always walked to tees knowing exactly what I was going to hit, but even before I played the tournament, I just see the golf shot, I feel comfortable. Finally went out there, I put the lights out of it. It was unbelievable. I made the craziest putt I've probably ever made on for par on 18, which was my ninth hole. I mean, the thing broke like 6 feet it just, and it went like right in the middle, and the middle was like the very back right side of the hole. So it was just like, and, you know, I'm putting without a line again, you know, and I felt freed up. The whole reason we did it was to free myself up to be more focused on making the ball go in the hole than to like roll the ball end over end, have some faith in the you know, in the stroke. And the speed started getting really good. I had actually worked with Josh Gregory in short game that week, and I was chipping well. The grass there is very easy to chip off of, and that's what I had not been doing great, you know, pretty much all last year, but leading up to it, that's what had been holding me back from piecing together certain rounds like, you know, I did on Thursday. So felt good. Finally, like, finished. And the best part of all of it, and I truly believe this in tournament golf, when you're playing like that, you need to finish it. You know, you need to finish it off the right way. You can't, and something I've done when I was younger in my career was you kind of want to just be done with the round when you're 4 or 5 under on a hard golf course through 10 holes. And instead, I remember I had it in my head. I'm like, this is what we've been waiting for. Do not look at this as like, oh my gosh, we like in an anxious way. If we finally are doing it, like, let's get off this golf course before something goes wrong. I'm like, I'm finishing this damn round. I've been doing this at home like constantly. And I remember I birdied 7 and then made a long one on 9, hung on the lip and dropped. And I just remember it felt good so many ways. Yeah, little one. They didn't get it on TV, shocker. But I felt like so much of this was starting to like, I had known it's very difficult golf. It's sports and especially golf is so difficult. You could feel things building. You could tell the world it's building. I talk to my mom all the time, my coach all the time. I'm like, guys, it's close. You know, my wife, like, it's getting close, it's getting close. And then, you know, you come out and it's like, well, where is it? Like, you can't keep shooting. You can't keep getting 37th at the Genesis. But all these things, like, I've been a very self-aware person. The Genesis, again, we get a weird rain delay. I'm playing great through 2 rounds, and I come back out after we finish the second one, and we have to play, you know, 20-some-odd holes. And I just came out the next day. I'm playing with Dustin Johnson. You know, I'm a little bit uneasy, and I lose my legs just a little bit. For whatever reason, nerves, maybe I, not to say I was out of shape, but like, hey, it is hard.
You know what? Pre-Peloton.
Pre-Peloton, bro. But like, I hit 2 really squirrely shots. I felt like I was out that golf course all day at Genesis. So I play like 8 bad holes that like kicked me out of the tournament. And then the rest of the tournament, I played fine. I get 37. No, like, obviously no good, but like, dang, like, we're talking about somebody who's come from like the bottom of the bottom. And I'm like starting to feel like I'm in these golf tournaments if you take out a few holes here and there. And like, I'm just talking stretches of holes, not like, oh, if I wouldn't have done this on 1, I wouldn't have done this on 17. Like, I'm talking like, give me 8 holes back, just this chunk of time. So finally at this Wells Fargo, like, I'm starting to feel like it's vibing, and what I've been telling people is true. And I did believe it, you know, but you never know. You're also playing against the best players in the world. Maybe you don't. You know, missing the cut at the Zurich made me feel like, man, maybe I'm playing some of the best golf of my life and I'm still missing cuts. Maybe my stuff isn't as tight as I think it is. And that's what Friday gave me a lot of push. But then Friday night was the toughest because I'm watching. I played it in the morning, so I could get to watch everybody kind of. I knew I was going to be very close to the lead. I mean, we had a big gap between third and like fourth. And you're waiting to see who you're going to be playing with. And obviously I'm nervous or whatever. And I get a text from Joe. I kind of stopped looking at the leaderboard, and Joe says, hey, I want you to like mentally prepare. I think we're going to be playing with Rory tomorrow if all things kind of align. I'm like, all right, cool. And like, I say, all right, cool. And in my head, I'm like, cool. Like, what? Like, what? So we end up getting the pairing, but, that was a good day. 63 bogey free.
Yeah. You find out it's Rory, you know, that evening, and you know who you're going to be paired with on Saturday, which isn't a final round, but a big day. Do you know, before we get to Saturday and the weekend, do you know your low round of 2019 prior to your 63? I know you're kind of Mensa level memory. Do you know what your low round was? Not of the wraparound, but of 2019.
I think I shot 60. Well, I know I shot 67 at Pebble on Sunday. And I think I might've shot 66 one day at the Phoenix Open. No, I don't think I did. I think it's no, 67.
Right. Nice.
I did shoot 66.
This is no. This is what I talk about. It was 67 at Pebble. I knew.
Okay. Yeah.
I ask you these questions not to ever set you up for failure. I ask you these questions because I know you'll remember. It was the 67. So I mean, you are well below your low round.
Yeah. It was my lowest ever on tour. I shot 63. I think at Sony. in my rookie year. But funny story, Friday night, go to dinner. I think I went to dinner with Joe and Bo Hostler. And I don't know if
you remember where you went?
Yeah, we went to a sushi place that isn't Cowfish. So Cowfish is the most famous.
Cowfish is good.
Oh, my God. It's so good. It mixes burgers and sushi. And it sounds
and the
terrible.
Rolls are awesome.
So the burgushi, man. I mean, it's so bomb.
You know what? Real quick, Cowfish. If anybody knows anybody at Cowfish, we just gave free advertising. Max needs a Cowfish gift card.
Regardless, guys, I will go back. I'll pay double. I love it. So, but we always go there, and we had gone there, I think, the night before, or two nights prior. Saw Rory there. Not a big deal. We're big ballers. And we went to, we had heard another place across the street, which I don't remember. They said it's better. And I was like, come on, guys, it can't be better. And they said it's better. So we, us three go. And I remember we were at dinner and the waitress walks over and said, hey, we just had some people ask, are you Dustin Johnson? They want to send over stuff. I'm like, as much as I'd like some free stuff. First off, I don't really drink really during the week of a tournament. And second of all, I'm not Dustin. And these guys can't be that big of fans because Dustin's not even playing this week. So that was not even like a, people always joke. Like, it's not like a humbling thing. It just like was a funny like anecdote from the week. But sushi was bomb, guys. Let me tell you this. It rivaled it. It didn't rival the scenery, but it rivaled the taste. I will give
Max, can I give you a a golf doppelganger I got one time?
Ooh.
It was a weirder moment. I know you've got Dustin a few times. You
I'm trying
me
to. Yeah, I get
you're
this,
staring
I'm
at me right now.
Who yours
what about
be?
My? Is it harder with my with?
Yeah,
my,
I know, and I know you. Scruff? When you know somebody too well, like you can't. But see, Dustin, I'll get people because when I see pictures like on Instagram or something, and I'll look. I'm like, dang, is that me? And I'll click, and it's Dustin. So I like, it's good because I even notice it. But
you get yourself mixed up.
I get all excited, man. I'm like, oh shoot, somebody took a picture. Nope.
Oh, this brand posted about. Oh no, it's Dustin.
Yeah, like some golf was playing today, and I was like, oh man, they are playing the 20 oh, they're not playing the 2019, it's a different one.
so US Open Shinnecock week, you know, a couple years ago, out to dinner with Joel Klatt and a couple of buddies. I don't even remember who it might have been. I don't think Faxon was there, but you know, it was a few of us broadcaster types, whatever. And we're leaving, and I'm just gonna let people know I don't get noticed ever because I don't, not really
talk. You're not on
I'm not
TV.
Really a person
your voice is on
people,
TV.
I'm not really a person that people know what they
hey,
look
aren't
like.
You that guy from the radio?
Yeah, are you the guy that does the thing? And so this guy comes out of the restaurant and he's like, hey man, good luck this week to me. And I was like, well, that's really cool. Now I'm with Klatt. Now I'm with Joel Klatt, who I'm like loving this, right? Because I'm getting noticed,
yeah,
and Joel's not.
Guy,
Joel's
yeah.
75,000 times more famous than I am. And so
it's
I'm like,
74,
oh, thanks, man.
Shane.
Okay,
right.
I go, ah, thanks, man. I appreciate it. And he goes, yeah. He goes, going for another. And I'm like, what?
Then
and he goes, yeah, man,
Brooks.
I thought I was Brooks Koepka.
Nice.
What
dude,
a compliment.
You all, I mean, hey, you would, you're in like the top two strongest professional golfers. He's obviously one of the strongest professional golfers. So
anyway,
it was
a compliment I've never received before, and I thought it really carried me through the week. So
it's
I
a
just
good
want to share.
One. He's a handsome dude. I mean,
you and I top five
one.
In the world doppelgangers, bro.
I really like this.
So that was my.
Hey,
I don't want to interrupt your story.
We're Ryder Cup partners.
You
man.
And I should be partners in the Ryder Cup. We'll just show up and see if they let us play. Just,
yeah,
no,
dude,
guys, it's us. It's us. We're gonna go in.
That's like the guys that go. Like, do you remember the Clay Thompson doppelganger that would go to Warriors games dressed up? We could do that. I'll get the fit. I'll get somebody to tech. I'll get like Xander to tell me what they're wearing, and then we'll get the outfits and stroll through. I'll use my PGA badge to get on the grounds, and then we'll just see how far we can get to the first tee.
You're gonna have to help me with the shirts to have them like tightened around the bicep,
we'll
like
sure
Koepka
you're
does.
Doing some serious curls.
I'm just so many curls.
Yeah, you're gonna be getting.
Hey,
juiced.
you said Rory, you and Rory eat at the same places. Do you think?
No,
last year Wells
place,
Fargo
place.
Week,
singular.
Do you think Rory last year at the Wells Fargo also did the change hotel budget move or no?
No, I don't think that was the thing for her. I just remembered another story. Holy cow, this is all coming back to me. Kelly James that week was there performing. He invited like five or six of us to go to dinner at Del Frisco's, which is like a pretty nice steakhouse. I usually don't do that. So we go. The crew was sick. Gary Woodland was there. I had mentioned how he had stiffed me on the practice route. We were joking. He was also eating with some other people, his wife and his agent. They were eating upstairs. They must have a private room. We were downstairs with normal people. It started
a
to make sense.
Pre-major win, by
yeah,
the way.
It started
this
to make
is...
sense why Gary was, you know, about to win. I mean, the guy's as cool as they come. But yeah, we went, and I remember the waiter was talking about, hey, if any of you guys win this week, you got to come back and party here on Sunday. We'll shut it down. I'm like, all right, you know, all of us were like, oh yeah, oh, sure, sure, sure. And like after on like Monday, I end up being, spoiler alert, I win this golf tournament. But after I was like, dang, I didn't go to Del Frisco's. And then I found out Joel went and did I was supposed to do. And I was so mad. But that was another funny one. When you look back at all these things, I'm sure that happens a lot of weeks where you're like, yeah, if I, you know,
sure, we'll do this. If I win, I'll do it.
This one, I finally was like, I remember that. But yeah, so yeah, so Friday night, go to bed. I'm nervous as could be. Wake up
is
Saturday.
Is it the most nervous you've been for a non-final round in your life, would you say?
Yeah, for a non-final round, for sure. Although Friday at Pumpkin Ridge, I will say I was really nervous. And I mentioned this in the press conference after on Sunday, but like I thought about it a lot. So Saturday, wake up where I was staying, I could walk to a Whole Foods. And every morning I had an afternoon time. I don't care if you're in the lead or not. Like killing time is hard, like for a golf tournament. So if you have like the 2 o'clock tee time, which I had, you know, people that from my category that I was on last year, we're in the last part of the each wave. So I'll play at 9:30 and I'll play at like 2. So what do you do all day, man, till 2? Like I don't even go to the course till like maybe 2 hours before my tee time to eat lunch. So I need to eat something. I need to move around. I've notice that when I just sit in my bed and I'm not moving my legs, it's just like, you know, it's good rest, but like my body isn't getting very activated, whether I need to work out or whatever. I need to at least walk around. So I was going to Whole Foods. So the Saturday I woke up, didn't, you know, I slept fine actually, but I didn't sleep in. And I was like, all right, I'm going to just start moving around. I'm going to start acting like, you know, at least start getting my body feeling like it's just another day. I go get food, whatever. Finally get to the golf course, feels like forever. But this is the part I mentioned. I driving to the golf course, I was nervous, man. Like nervous. But I really thought about what you're saying. Like, have I been like this before on a Saturday? And I'm like, man, like you did this on a Friday 1 year ago. And if you would have failed, you would have. I honestly don't know where I would be right now. Like, I truly don't. I'd like to think I'd have been back, but it would have been another 2 years at least.
Wait, and, for people that don't know, do you expand a little on Pumpkin? Just so people know what you're talking about.
I played on the Korn Ferry Tour, and this is the year after I lost my card. It was the Web Tour at the time, and I had lost my card, and I had had I know I probably say this a lot, but I had had a year where I felt like I was getting better, but I was coming from some dark places with my golf swing, and as a work in progress, and you have to play your way through it, blah blah blah. I'm always on like the kind of the cut line of keeping your card for the next year on the web, which means that you also go to the playoffs with the chance to get your PGA Tour card, which is top 75. All year I was inside it, but wasn't doing myself any favors. Bad finishes on Sundays, not really helping myself. Well, I get to Pumpkin Ridge, last regular season event of the year. I'm like 67th on the list or something like that, and I played like crap on Thursday, like no birdies, like just trash golf. Not really sure why. I'm hitting the ball well on the range, and then I get out on Friday, and if I miss this cut, I didn't think that I would lose it, which I found out I would have, but I didn't think I would lose my card. But if I do, I have to go to second stage of Q school the next year. Well, I came out, didn't make another birdie until my freaking 11th hole the next day. So it's like 28 holes. Maybe I made one birdie, I'm not sure, but it was like nothing. And I played the last 8 holes in 5 under, and I birdied my last 4 holes that day to make the cut. Found out at the end of the week I would have lost my card by $92, been back in Q school, and like I said, I would have absolutely no idea where I am today. So driving to the golf course Saturday morning, you know, I'm about to play one of my favorite golfers in the world, play with him. I have a big lead on him. I'm up a few, but I'm in the second last group. So take both those things by themselves individually, and I'd be nervous as can be. Put them together, and I'm like, I've just never been in either of these positions at all. I'd fortunately play with Dustin Johnson for 36 holes at Riviera, that like very recently, because that was my first, like, not starstruck, but my first time playing in front of a lot of people, playing with somebody who is like going to be one of the best players ever, in Dustin.
Handsome, super handsome.
I mean, God, he's so handsome. He looks just like this other handsome guy I know too. So that helped, but like you're over your skis, like you just don't know what to expect. And I drove to that golf course and just was beating it in my head. I'm like, these Rory, like I was telling myself, and whether he does or doesn't, it doesn't matter, but I was just telling him, Rory doesn't know nerves, like you know nerves, like you know him, like like Rory's biggest issue in my head, like I'm making him this villain in my head, which he's obviously not, but I'm just like, he's had everything. Like he's never had to go back to the Corn Ferry Tour. He's never had a birdie the last four. You know who has? Like you have, and I'm just telling myself in my head. And like grand scheme of things, this is who I used to be when I was like a pretty bad dude in college, like with golf. Like I liked playing against Justin Thomas, and I liked making these fake things that I'd make up in my head that like made me want to beat him, you know, like that's who I used to be. And I was kind of getting that back. And like, it was kind of foreshadowing like how I've started to feel a little bit more lately, but it's like, you give me Rory for a year and I don't do a great job of breaking it down like this. And I get a little more nervous. If you told me for a year, you versus me versus Rory, FedEx Cup points, I'd be pretty intimidated, and I need to get better at that. But what I've been good at in my life is you give me and Rory one day and I love my chances. Like I'll do that every day. So it's just like trying to get better. So I'm finally in this position. It's like, well, you've been preaching this man for a while. You know, your golf game went away, but we found out that the brain is still there. And I got on that, you know, I was nervous. Don't get me wrong. Not to mention you're in the second last group. Like I said, these things are both nervy things. If I was playing with Rory in 35th place, I'd be nervous too. So for the first time. So yeah. So lo and behold, I get to the putting green after, you know, our warm up. And I usually get to the tee anywhere between like, you know, 5-10 minutes before. And you know, I'm usually pretty quick there. And Joe mentioned, and this is, again, just, I can't say this enough, having Joe on the bag, who is a veteran caddy, who's won before, who's been to President's Cups before, who's played with all the best players in the world before, caddy for one of the best players in the world before, like having him was so helpful because it's just experience. I don't know anything that I'm about to get myself into. And he said, do not get to that tee as early as you normally do. Stroll up late. He's like, you don't want to sit there for 5 minutes and wait until Rory comes and you're going to hear a long round of applause. So I'm like, dude, great point. So I get there late.
And
I
mean, it was Rory's birthday, right?
Yeah. And I did not know that. Well, I kind of knew that part. Didn't know what was going to happen. So yeah, I hit the tee shot and I freaking had jelly legs and I rope just pumped one down the fairway and I get like, you know, like this much applause, not a lot. And then, you know, Rory goes up to hit, they sing him happy birthday before he hits. And all of a sudden I'm like, what have I gotten myself into? And they did it like nearly every hole I played. But you know what? I loved it because first of all, Rory is such a good dude and he didn't build it up. He didn't, like, we even asked him on a hole. He's like, do you like this, man? Like, it's been 8 holes of happy birthday. Like it's a lot. And he's like, you know, he likes shrugs. So I'm sure he loves the support, but like it's a lot, it's overkill. And you know, he's probably looking out for me a little bit in the sense like this is super, not super, but like it's disrespectful to me. Like I'm trying to win a golf tournament just as much as he is, and it's kind of like I'm not there. But man, didn't that give me some freaking chip on my shoulder, some swag? Because again, it goes back to like, if you're gonna take down Goliath. And in this time, it's weird because Goliath isn't even winning the golf tournament. He's just in my group. Like, we had a big lead on him. But if you're going to take down the Goliath, you better find some something in you that's going to make you kind of want to, like, spite everybody. It just became, like, everybody against me. And I just wanted to, like, I was everywhere I walked. I'm like, yeah, you could keep cheering for him. Keep singing, baby. Keep singing, because this is not the happiest birthday he's going to have. Like, that's what's just, like, going through my mind.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back. How do you not, in that moment, how do you not make it you versus Rory and get too caught up in that, forgetting about everything else? Because like you said, you were in the penultimate group. I mean, you weren't even in the final pairing come the weekend on Saturday. So, I mean, two questions. A, how do you make it not like that? And B, are you better if it is like that? Because it seems like, you know, I think Simmons always talks about chip on your shoulder guy. It seems like maybe you being chip on your shoulder guy is a good thing, right? I mean, it might bring the best out in you.
So it's a phenomenal question. It goes in waves, and where there's no right answer, I would say. But in this case, I told myself driving like in the morning, like, don't make it like exactly what you're saying. Don't make it you against Rory, because
right.
Rory's got to catch me. He's got to catch Joel, and he's going to catch Duff. Like, we all have a pretty sizable lead on him and the rest of the field. But I did have this weird feeling that at that time I kept just like looking at it as me versus Rory. And I kind of thought to myself, I was like, yo, Rory's going to play good. If you make it you versus Rory and you keep it within earshot or beat him, like, you're going to be in a good spot. And what it did was it kind of took my mind off of the leaderboard. I wasn't so worried about the lead. I knew that I had touched my first lead on four. I had just kind of glanced at the board and I made a pretty tough par putt or whatever. And I was like, man, I got my first lead to myself. But I tried not to. Now, as the round went on, he was playing well. And I kind of thought to myself, I didn't really play me versus Rory, but I was kind of sizing it up a little bit, which is, again, I don't think that's the right thing to do. But it was just happening, and it was okay, because when you're both firing pretty well, like, it's all good. But I just remember like little things. I do remember Joe pretty much for an entire year and a half had been telling me, and got my coach to tell me, and I, you know, we never really talked about it like this way, but I knew that it was kind of a mental game, to make me feel, you know, better slowly about my golf. But, you know, Joe has always told me that I'm one of the best iron players he's ever seen, and one of the best long iron players. And he could literally drill this in my head for a long time and still does. But you know, at the time, it's hard to believe that when you haven't, first of all, played with any of them. And second of all, I mean, I can't be like, I have one top 10 in like 4 years. So how can I be? And I remember we got up onto six, really long par three. And this is such a small sample size, and I don't want people to think that like it's an obvious like parallel. And I understand this is kind of like a weird way to do it, but we both had to hit four iron, me and Rory, and I hit mine inside him. And I remember walking off that tee, I was telling myself in my head, this is Rory's one of the best ones. And I finally started to, it's like everything Joe had said, I finally had some tangible evidence. I'm like, yeah, you know what I am. And I remember the very next hole, I actually almost got to his drive, and I went first and I hit the most beautiful high cut five iron I could imagine off this little hanging lie to a back pin, and it almost goes in, rolls off the green. I end up making par, and Rory hit a pretty good iron shot. No doubt, probably a six iron, pretty good, but mine was better. Like, I know mine was better, and he made birdie, I made par, and I walked up that hole still with like chest out.
Didn't even matter.
Like, all this stuff that Joe has been saying, I mean, it wasn't BS. Like, this is some true stuff. And it started to really, like, it was like weird how like this progression I can kind of remember it as the day went on. I kept thinking to myself, it almost like what everybody else is probably thinking, like, this guy's got to fall off sometime. And the whole time I'm like, the longer you keep me in this game, man, I'm going to start to be who I used to be a little bit. Like, I'm going to start to be that guy. Nobody knows that guy here. I barely remember it, but Joe knows that guy. I grew up Joe, like, telling me about how I was that guy. And it felt cool to watch it happen. And the longer I stay in that game, I mean, I made a bad par on 15, Rory made birdie. And I just kept reminding myself, I'm like, I'm not like, as far as shot for shot goes, I am not that far behind this guy. Like, not the tournament. Like, I knew I was going to be in the tournament at this point, but this guy. And it was like, that's why, you know, walking, you know, off that golf course, talking to Joe about it, it's like, he beat me for the day, but I got myself into the lead. I bogeyed 18, but I got myself in the lead, tied for the lead. And it was like, in the small scheme of the golf tournament, I hadn't done a lot. I had basically kept myself where I was. I had lost some ground on Rory, who, you know, who is now a little bit closer to me. But at the same time, in the grand scheme of like golf life, I had, you know, summited Everest and back, because I felt like all of a sudden everything my little like team bubble people have been trying to tell me was right. And I finally started to believe
it. You got
it.
To like, see it.
I yeah. saw it and I believed it. And I was like, man, I'm playing with this guy who is a freak of nature. And yeah, he beat me. But like, if we broke down that round, I did a lot great. Like, and not great for me, like great. Like, I'm starting to see what great is. And I'm like, okay, you're not that far off of great here. And it felt good. And that's why, like, it really calmed me down after. And that's why I got lucky that Rory played well, which, I mean, I guess not lucky. He does this all the time. But I got lucky that my mindset was a lot of like me versus Rory, because like, he played well, and me playing Rory like end up being a good thing, because we obviously, you know, you don't play yourself out of the tournament if you're going toe to toe with somebody who's playing well. But second, it was like even better, because in my mind the whole day I was like comparing myself to Rory a little bit, and I didn't feel that far behind him. Now the second time I play with him in a big spot, he beat me by like 47. So, but in this small spot, it was nice and it felt good. And, yeah, it was a mega setup thing. And then you start doing stuff you've never done before. I'm doing like, you know, press conference type stuff and all this extra, you know. I got my coach calling me, asking me if he thinks he should fly out. And, you know, it's like stuff you don't think of. I'm like, no, dude, like, stay home. Like, and I told him, I was like, me and Joe got this. Like, we got this. Lacey's probably, you know, I think she had mentioned flying out. It's like, just keep this stuff the same. Like, I don't want to talk about this stuff. I don't want to talk about this stuff.
Right.
But like, there are great questions of this stuff that really does matter and happens. Like, maybe I do want my coach there. But I kept thinking to myself, and maybe this is a sign of confidence, but I kept thinking to myself, that week really did feel like me and Joe against the world. And I felt like I've never leaned on Joe or anybody harder in my life, like just really like relied on him. And it really felt like I have the best caddy in the world who knows everything that's about to happen. I'm just going to, it's just me and him. Like, Les, like, love you, but it's Joe and I got this. Like, if I warm up tomorrow and it's terrible, I almost guarantee Joe's going to say something that's going to be good. And if I warm up and it's great, I know Joe's going to say something good. And that's how it kind of felt. But it was weird. All this stuff that you've never had to deal with, more text messages, more phone calls, more, you know, hoopla. That's a lot of stuff that goes on.
It seems like the way you're talking and discussing this, it does seem like you had a little of an edge, a little approach of nobody believes I can do this.
Yeah.
I at times didn't believe I can do this. Yeah. I'm starting to believe I can do this. And then there was a moment where you're toe to toe with now the number one ranked golfer in the world who is, you know, has dipped his toe in the number one world ranking for the last 10 years. And you're going, I can go shot for shot with this guy. I mean, you were four clear of him going into Saturday. You shoot 70, he shoots 68. But like you said, it was close, and there were times where you're doing it. You did tell me a funny story. I think you said it on the clubhouse after your win. I asked you if you were watching Rory, if you were paying attention to what you did. He did, and you told me about his drive on 18. You said it was a – you finally said he missed a drive, right?
Yeah.
And oh, by the way, no.
Yeah. So Rory, like – you know, all day he had driven the ball unbelievable, like he normally does. He had a one bad drive on 10. And even that was like, it looks better than most bad drives. But when you play with Rory, as someone who plays golf a lot, I see a lot of golf swings. I mean, his golf swing has like a decent amount of like reroute or whatever. I mean, it's as perfect as can be, but you still watch it and you're like, in the ball flight, you're like, one of these, he's going to lose a ball way right. Like, I know he hits a big high draw. Like, everybody who hits a big high draw misses a drive way right at some point. The only drive he had missed was like a kind of mini overhook. So 18 is like the hardest tee shot in the world. And I mean, it fits him perfect, but he finally gets up there and he just pumps this thing so far right. And I'm like, thank you. Like, thank you. Not because I wanted to play bad, but he's human. Like, I had to watch this bullshit for I'm gonna swear about that because it's annoying to watch, but I had to watch this thing all day and it's just so aggravating. And the ball goes out to the right of these trees. I'm like, all right, fine. Like, the guy is like a person, hooks back 25 yards, middle of the fairway, 9 iron in. I'm like, I hate this guy. Like, he's too good at this driver
he's too
thing.
Good.
It was so he's frustrating. But I mean, that's Rory, man. Like, it's the beauty of his golf game. It is remarkable how accurate he can be off that tee with that
it's
driver
as far as he hits it.
Man, yeah. It's a joke.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back.
Yeah. Before we get to Sunday, because I'm not sure I've ever heard you talk about that Saturday like this, how you talked about your internal thoughts and what you battle with internally and you really going up against the world in your head for what was happening in front of you. How important, of all the stuff you've gone through, of the struggles, of feeling like you couldn't hit a driver on the planet, of going from the highest of highs, as you've said, to the lowest of lows with your golf game, to battling through Korn Ferry, how important for you currently in the state you're in and going forward throughout the next portion of your career was that Saturday playing with a guy like Rory, seeing first person, if it's even first person, I guess it might be zero person. What was it like seeing, hey, I'm Max Homa and this guy's got to think about me now?
Yeah, it was big. I mean, in the small scheme of it, the next day I was a 10th as nervous on the first tee. I mean, like literally a 10th. I felt like I'd already burned all the nerves off me. And yeah, I mean, I was nervous, but it was like, I was nervous for such a different reason. It wasn't for embarrassing myself in front of some unbelievable golfer. It wasn't for any of that BS. It was for like, you know, all of a sudden I'm just like nervous about winning a golf tournament, which is cool. I mean, I'd done that before. It started to feel a lot smaller than the day before, which felt a ton bigger, especially because Saturday, you can't win a golf tournament on a Saturday. You can lose it. Sunday, it's like this winner go or winner don't, like whatever. I mean, you go, that's a cool feeling to have. But yeah, it was, I think I've mentioned this part before, whether it's on this or maybe the clubhouse or somewhere. When you go through struggles, and I truly believe this for in any walk of life, whether it is marriage, whether it is your job, whether it's school. When you have a big dip in your results, when you start to get better at, especially in golf, when you start to get better at the golf, you don't know if that time in the dungeon beat your mental strengths. You don't know, because there's no way to test them. Like, it's not like you're playing bad and also contending for wins. Like, it's not like you're playing bad and also going toe to toe with the best golfers in the world. If you're in school, like, people who would be comfortable going into a test, well, you've been doing really poorly in tests. Maybe you haven't been preparing right. Well, now you're prepared right. Is your mindset still in, like, being ready to take this test, to give this speech, to do these things, to be a better, like, husband or wife? Like, you know, you can improve, but your brain still needs to, like, connect with that to achieve what you need to in like the high stress scenarios in a Sunday, you know, with the lead. So, or in a Saturday with Rory. And all this time I had worked so hard to work on my golf game, but to make sure that I kept thinking I was a bad dude somewhere in my brain. Like, I kept trying to remind myself. That's where Lacey, my wife, came in the most handy and the most clutch, and also my coach Les, like, cause this is pre Joe being on my bag when we were in the beginning of the struggle, or not the beginning, but the middle and the back end of the struggles. Was anytime I would, you know, moan and gripe and say I sucked, Lacey was the first person, like, just jump on me, you know, make me feel better and tell me that I cannot say that stuff. Les was saying that. People were gassing me up for no reason. Like I was saying with Joe and Les and in the golf specific stuff, being like, you're the best iron player I've ever seen. It's like, yeah, man, like, that can't be true. Like, I know it's not, but slowly these things, you know, affirmations start to build. So all this time we're doing stuff to my brain to make sure that my brain is at this correct level, that when the golf swing starts to get there, I'm not going to be scared of it. And that's what, in the biggest, you know, the most extreme way, the Rory day was so important. Joe said, he's like, this is going to make you or break you. And it made me, and it's going to unfortunately make me, you know, for hopefully the rest of my career. But it was like the moment, even like the moment I'm on like the fourth hole, I'm like thinking to myself, why am I not more nervous? Like, I've been more nervous on in a web event on a Thursday than this all of a sudden. Like, I feel like this is what I've been supposed to be doing. And like, then I'm starting to remind myself, like, yeah, man, like, we've been prepping for this, but it was cool to know that my head was still on right, even when my swing was so like, not like, it was just wasn't functioning.
Yeah, you never know, lost the belief.
That's a scary feeling. I never lost the belief in it. Yeah, I never lost the tenacity. I never lost the me. Like, the thing that I think makes up me, my DNA, is I rarely get super intimidated by anybody. I can wow, you know, I can have my jaw on the floor, but you still tell me, like, I'll watch Rory hit a driver all day long, and it is the most fascinating thing. And I'll talk to you about it. And I'll tell you how much better he hits a driver than me. I'm okay with that. But I'm also going to play him straight up for money if he wants to play it. Like, that's me. Like, that's my DNA, right? It might be stupid, whatever, but like, that's who. And it was cool to see that was still me on that Saturday, because that was a big spot for me. I mean, you're going from not just contending for your first tournament, after seeing some dark places, and not just doing that. You're not just playing with any other PGA Tour guy. You're playing with the guy on his favorite golf course on his birthday. Like, throw more things at me, please. I mean, it was a weird spot, and it was cool to overcome it just on that Saturday. Whether I won or not, the pride Joe told me he had in me after that Saturday meant more than winning, because I felt the same way, man. I was like, man, like, this is all we've been talking about. I could lose that tournament, and I'm walking in the next tournament with as much swagger and confidence as I would have had I won it, because we both started to see what he had been preaching a bit.
So you get to Sunday, but I want to talk Saturday night. So
yeah, that was a fun night.
What's up?
That was a fun night. I mean, God, I'm like barely sleeping.
Yeah, I was gonna say. So I know you say you're a tenth of the nervous on the tee on Sunday. You're playing with Duffner, right? Was that
Duffner last group,
so
with Duffner.
You and Jason Duffner last group. Jason Duffner didn't play excellent on Saturday. He'd fired some pretty good rounds early, 68, yeah. 63. He shot 71. I mean, not bad, but not anything crazy on Saturday. But what'd you do Saturday night? So you get done with the round, you got to do all of this stuff you don't normally do. You got to do press. Yeah. I'm assuming you have to do a press conference.
We did like just the one where you stand on the box and it makes it look a lot, it makes you look a lot cooler than you are. It's a lot smaller of a stage than it looks on TV.
So you do all this stuff. You get out of there. You go to dinner with anybody?
I don't remember. Dude, that's weird. I don't remember what I did Saturday night for dinner. I'm pretty sure because we got finished. Yeah, that's right. We got finished really late. Because there was a rain delay that day when we got off of, there was two, we got off of 10, we're on 10 and also after like 12 or 13. So we were really late. So I went back and I got dinner by myself. I might've gone to Whole Foods and got dinner and I was just kind of by myself. So you're kind of trying to keep the phone down, but also you got to talk to the certain people you got to talk to, you know, my parents, my wife or my fiance at the time, my coach, like just talking. But, kind of fortunate. Such a long day, you don't have a ton of time to think about. But then again, I keep saying this on this podcast, but experience matters. Wake up in the morning, and I had already waited for a long time for these rounds to start twice that week. I got to do it again, and I just did the same stuff I'd been doing. Walked through the hotel, walked to Whole Foods, took my time, had my breakfast, walked back, you know, did the same stuff, like all the same stuff. Just as far as like moving around, relaxing. But I also got to pack up my bags because I got to leave that afternoon.
But you're not a big superstitious guy, right?
It wasn't superstitious. It was just like I found my routine of like, you got to get up, Max. You can't sit on your phone.
Right.
We're not looking at stuff. I threw my headphones in. I just listen to music, listen to podcasts, take my mind off of the golf because it's unhealthy to think about all this stuff. You know, it's too much energy. So, you know, kind of displacing that energy into other stuff, kind of calming my mind down, getting myself just to feel like me. But this is where some of the experience was good in the sense that I've been here before in my life. Like,
right.
And I've remembered those times. So it's not like I felt like this was totally foreign. It was just foreign to how big the stage was. But I had won golf tournaments. I had been in the lead. I'd been in the final group in college and stuff like that. Never really in professional golf on a Sunday. But like I'd been in the moment. I knew what it was going to feel like. And I knew what I needed to do in the morning, which helped a lot. It was just going to be a bigger stage the next day. But again, no bigger stage than playing with Rory, unless it was on Sunday than it was on Saturday. So I knew it was going to be intense, but it also wasn't going to be as big. And at this point I am in the last group. So it was kind of cool knowing like, you know, the golf tournament is going to run through me, Joel and Duffner. So it's like, if I play a good round of golf, like golf course is hard. Like you're going to have to play some tremendous, tremendous golf to catch us.
Yeah. So you play final round, get on the first tee, you kind of roll through the first four holes, four pars, make birdie on five. Do you remember what you did on five?
Well, I'm just going to run it back. One and two, it was blowing like 25 out of nowhere for like, and I was like, holy cow, this is going to be a hold on and pray type day. One was the hardest pin ever, and Duffner hit it to like 4 or 5 feet, and I hit it just over the green, but like an amazing shot. That's like where you were leaving it. I got up and down. Duffner misses putt, and it did help me. I kind of thought to myself, I'm not the only one that's nervous. Like, I felt very comfortable all of a sudden. And then two, I had an amazing up and down. And then three, I'd hit one of the greatest shots I had ever hit from the pine straw fire. I missed this short little bunny birdie, but it was one of those. I didn't walk off all that mad. I was like, holy cow, like I'm pulling off stuff I don't normally, you know, that was felt very easy. Had an easy fourth hole, like, you know, hit on the green, two putt, whatever. But yeah, five, I hit a really good drive, which I had messed up the day before. So it was nice to hit the fairway. And I had a front pin, and I had like a gap wedge. It was a perfect gap wedge. I'd been playing a cut. I just had to play like a 2-yard cut off the left, and I landed it pin high, spun it back, you know, to like 4 or 5 feet. And it was like this outside of the left putt. And all honestly, in most situations, it's not the one you want, I guess, for your first birdie outside the left, you know, for a righty is never fun. But I mean, I had literally, besides the one I missed on three, I hadn't missed a freaking putt in so long. I was like, this is so easy. And like my distance control was still great with my irons, which has always been like, when a staple of my game, and my speed was unbelievable on the green still. So I'm like, dude, like you're not nervous. Like you can think you are, but you're not. Cause like you can tell yourself you're nervous, but my body isn't reacting like I'm nervous. So just like keep doing whatever the hell you're doing. Then we get to seven was the only part where I wasn't comfortable. I told myself I wasn't really going to look at a lot of leaderboards. We get back there and I'm walking off six, walking back to seven green. It's a long walk, like 60 yards, par five. And as I'm walking, past me is Justin Rose and Rory or Ricky or somebody. And I'm like, what the hell are these guys doing here? They're two groups in front of us. And I'm like, oh my God, we have like a 30-minute wait on this tee. And I get back there, and the only time I glance at these, and not the leaderboard, but their scores, was it's Joel and Pat Perez. And all day I'm thinking Rory's coming. Rose is coming, Fowler's coming, Sergio's coming, Perez is coming, Duffner's coming. And I mean, Joel and I have talked about this. I never really thought of him as an issue, and he never thought of me as an issue. And I see Perez is a lot over par early, and Duffner was over par. And I'd seen Rose, and he hadn't done anything. And whoever was in his group, I'm blanking, hadn't done a lot. And it's just me and Joel, and we both talked about how comfortable we all of a sudden felt. Because I'm like, he thought the same thing about me. I could beat Max, and I thought, I could beat Joel. Like, we play together all the time. Like, this is not nearly as scary. And that was a weird, big moment. Also, like, not the best, because sitting back on that tee for freaking what felt like 3 hours was obviously not ideal.
So you birdie the seven, you birdie the par five there.
Yeah. Great. Oh, I forgot to say that part. This was another huge moment. The night before Saturday night, JT texts me, and for people that know, JT and I, good buddies. Like we just like both came through at the same time. We actually used to hate each other. Now we like love each other. He's always like my little brother that's just been like significantly more, successful than me. But I think he's like one of the most genuine, great dudes there is. So he, has always been, you know, it's also awkward at times when your peers and like one of you is just considerably more like established, and he obviously is, but he'd always done such an amazing job. And I don't know if he listens, but like, I do thank him a lot just for keeping me his friend, because when I was in the doldrums, like, you have a friend like JT, who's like one of the best golfers in the world, and you feel kind of like you shouldn't be able to associate with him because he's so cool. And he would keep me in that loop, which was cool. But he texts me, goes, "Hey man, like, good luck tomorrow." Like, he said something a little bit of like a advice, but not a lot. I said, "Thanks." And I just texted back, "Thanks man. Like, you're the man," or whatever. And I sat there for like 30 seconds. I was like, screw it. I said, ask him a freaking question. I said, any advice? Like, I was like, you've won here in a major. Like, he won the PGA there. I was like, you got any advice? And he sent me back this long thing. And he said, winning's a lot easier than you think it is. You do not need to force it. Just go do you and you'll be fine. And I remember I got to that seventh hole. I hit actually a pretty good drive. Wind almost blows in the water. Looks way worse once I get down there than I thought. I thought it might be in the right side of the fairway. Ball's way below my feet. And to this day, I know I can hit the shot. It's like a slice 6-iron, but like, ball way below my feet. It wasn't really worth it. Joe mentions, he's like, let's lay this thing up. And I just like slapped me in the forehead of JT's text, where he said, you don't need to do anything special. Like, basically, don't be an idiot and trust your golf game. So I laid it up. And I mean, everyone in the world would have laid that up most likely, but you know, you have that inkling, but it hit me. And not only did I lay it up, I hit a, you know, another safe wedge. Don't take on too much with the wedge shot. Like, hit it to 15, 20 feet. You know, I'm not trying to make birdie, or not, no, I'm not trying to make birdie, but I'm not trying to like be a hero all of a sudden. And I hooped this like 15, 20 footer. And I did give that one a fist pump. And I just remember, I was like, all this stuff starting to make sense. What he said, what Joe's been saying, like, there's like, they, you know, I get it. And it felt good to do something smart that you listen to from a major champion and one of the best in the world, and be like, yeah, man, like, you got, like, I feel like I had all this stuff in my corner, you know, like, I was like angels in the outfield, like, everything everyone's saying, I'm finally starting to grasp. And of course it's right, cause I have like the coolest friends there could be. And so that was a big birdie, you know, just because like, I knew I was in the probably close to the leader in the lead at that point. And like, I'm starting to really like listen to these things people have been telling me that I have not really listened to much in the past.
Yeah. I don't want to say it feels like a perfect storm, because of course there's a weather delay and that would be a little too on the nose, but you know, you start off solid. I mean, you're 200 through seven, you par 8 and yeah. 9.
No bogeys and not a lot of stress, which was good.
When did the horn blow?
So the horn blows on 14.
So you birdie 10 and 11. So
yeah, that was
so crazy. You make two big birdies on 10 and 11. What's the lead at? Do you know what the lead is at this point before and after you walk off?
Had a pretty 11? Good feeling it was between me and Joel, just because I had seen that board. And on 9, I didn't birdie 8, and they moved it up drivable. And I didn't birdie 8, missed like a kind of a short putt. And I was pretty, not mad, but I was like, gosh, like, you know, everything seems bigger in the moment, but I was like, God, that's not good. Cause nine, you know, the rest of the golf course is impossible. So 9, I'd hit the fairway and I'm waiting for Joel to putt. And Joel does his classic where he hits a putt and immediately starts walking like he missed it, and it goes in, and he does his whole, like, you know, whatever, his BS. And I'm like, okay, Joel just made par. Well, I find out later that was for bogey. So I didn't know that. So I'm assuming we're still pretty close to each other, you know, even maybe he's one up, maybe I'm one down, but we're very going to be close. Then on 10T, we have a wait, and I'm watching a screen on the green of 10, and Justin Rose misses a birdie putt. And I'm thinking, all right, well, 10, like, that's kind of your shot for a while. I mean, you could make birdies on other ones, but that's like the good shot. I'm like, that's interesting. So now it's starting to feel more and more like it's me and Joel. you know, I get to, you know, play 10. I do birdie 10 and 11. I hit a, you know, really, really, really bad bunker shot on 10, but I left it below the hole and made like a putt, just kind of how the week went. I putted unbelievable. And then 11 hit a really bad tee shot. I've been struggling to draw it. It's one of the few holes you really do have to turn on besides 18. But, you know, I got lucky. I missed it left of the bunker. Again, at this point, I'm just trying not to make bogeys. Like I know I'm in a pretty good spot. I haven't looked yet, but I'm in a good spot. Hit a really good 9-iron. And then made a great putt, but horn blows on 14. You could see it coming in. So it's like, you're kind of waiting for it, which helped a little bit. I played up on 14 every single time and hit a terrible wedge shot. Like I'm trying to hit this thing, anything like 15 feet right of the pin, 10 feet right of the pin, and have it spin left. And I pull it and it's like, it's at the pin, but like, you can't be left because left runs off the green and possibly in the water. Now, I pulled it just slightly enough where it wasn't like hooking, but I saw it when it spun. I'm like, oh my God, it's in the water. Like, you dumb, dumb person. Like, we just got through so much hard golf without any mistakes. You just pulled it in the water. And I get up there and of course it stayed up. Like, you know, when I saw the ball mark, you know, I'm trying to tell myself I didn't get that lucky because I'm trying to keep myself positive, but I don't think I did, because where the ball landed, if it would have gone in the water, that would have been horrendous break. But I hit a pitch and now you could feel the rain about to come. Like, it's getting very dark. And I hit this chip and it just gunned it a little bit. And it runs by 5-6 feet, and now horn blows, mark it. I look at it and we have to leave, and it is raining so hard. And I'm all of a sudden like, you got to be freaking kidding me. Like, so I know I'm in a good spot because I think four under through that many holes. And I mean, it just couldn't be worse timing.
I mean, I was going to say worse timing. Had you had a moment through 13 holes into 14 that would have been a worse moment for the horn to blow than having a 6-footer for par?
No, because I had made a really good par putt on the hole prior, 13, but that par putt wasn't very hard and it didn't feel like a bad hole so much, because like that hole I had flared a 7-iron, a bad 7-iron, but like I left it on the correct side of the hole. I hit a pitch up that was a good pitch. Like, it just felt like you were in the rhythm of course you're gonna make this 5-footer. Like,
right,
you did everything right. I mean, you hit a bad 7-iron, but like nothing went wrong. Whereas 14, I felt like I was doing a lot of stuff dumb, like pulling a sand wedge, pitching it too far. Like, these things weren't very hard shots and I was kind of making a mess of it. And maybe that, I guess in that regard, the delay was kind of a good thing.
Okay.
But no, timing wise, pressure wise, it was the worst time ever, because you're also about to step into the gauntlet of the last, you know, three holes of, you know, Quail Hollow, which are the hardest three holes in a row to end at any golf course. So it's like, no, this, I don't want any bad vibes, especially because if you come out, you make that bogey, it feels like you're in a new round of golf where you're not playing well, where I am playing well. Like, I think in my press conference, even if I would have missed that putt in that moment, if there was no weather delay, I would have been still in the vibe of, dude, you are playing some great golf. But instead, now, like, I'm starting a new day, kind of. So, no, not there.
Not ideal.
The worst time.
You're saying, wait, was there any moment personally during the weather delay, you know, Do you look and see where you're at? I mean, I'm assuming you did. I'm assuming it's impossible.
No, I didn't.
You didn't.
I did an interview with Amanda. I told her, do not tell me the score, please. Didn't. I sat by myself, didn't ask anybody anything. I called Lacey. I said, don't tell me one thing about the golf. She said, okay. And then I walk into the practice range and I finally said, you know, I felt like I said before, I felt like it was me and Joe against the world. And I said, hey, do you know where we're at? And he laughed. He goes, yeah. I was like, should I know? And he's like, sure. And I was like, all right, what is it? And he goes, we're three up. And I'm like, fuck. Okay. Like, cool, man. Like, this is my golf term. I know that.
What'd you think you were? Like before he told you three up, what'd you
What's
think
weird
you were?
Is
you
I remember? Never really thought about it. I thought I might be one or two, but I never really thought about the number. I just knew I was playing so well that I was leading the golf tournament. There was
okay.
No way. I'd seen enough. There was no way anybody was four under. And I knew one of the guys who had to be playing with me and he wasn't. So it had to be Joel. And I knew Joel wasn't because I'd seen him, you know, make par 9, par on 10 or whatever it was. Like, I knew that he couldn't be, but I never really like broke it down. So this gave me the time to break down. Now I have a 3-shot lead. And all of a sudden I'm like, this is your golf tournament to win or lose. Like, this is, there's no, nobody can take this from you at this point. Like, this is yours. You're giving it to somebody or you're holding on to it, which was a weird feeling.
So you knocked the putt into 14, which I think you've talked about is one of the bigger moments of your career. Is that fair to say?
It's the coolest thing. It's the best feeling in the world. I made the putt and I walked off and I won the golf tournament. There was
okay
at that point that there's literally nothing. If I can do that, there was not one shot coming in. I don't care how hard that golf course is. There's not one shot coming in that's scary enough to beat me, because that's as bad as it gets.
Isn't it so wild that this sport, and I mean, maybe tennis is like this. You and I wouldn't know. Maybe basketball is like this. I don't know. But it's so crazy that a 5 foot putt.
Yeah. Isn't that
5 foot putt on holes that are 490 and 550 and 620 and stuff like that.
With water it's a everywhere.
Water everywhere. Rough's brutal, you know, slick greens. It's a 5 foot putt that a guy that is one of the best players in the world rest his hat on every night. I mean, it's just weird. So wild that golf does this.
A five-footer teaches you more about what's inside of you than what's outside, I think, especially when you're playing well. Because when you're playing well, it was a pretty straight putt. Like, I had plenty of time to read it. I wasn't going to read it wrong. It was like, man, you miss this putt, and something's not screwed up with your stroke. Something's screwed up. You know, I've proven that day I could putt it. Something screwed up maybe on the inside just a little bit. The nerves are going to get the better of you, and then all of a sudden that's what's so cool about golf and sports. Like it's a serious fork in the road, and they go the opposite direction, and you got to pick one. One of them's got to happen. And you know, I did the good side of this, and all of a sudden I walk off that tee thinking I won this golf tournament. I do the bad side of it, and all of a sudden I'm like, man, maybe are you not controlling your emotions, your temper, your nerves well enough? And you know, obviously I fortunately did, and I walk off, and it's like, dude, I mean, then I just
this is mine.
Like,
it was yours. It was your
swagger.
Championship.
Yeah, it was mine. I hit the tee shot again. Tee shot 15 was the only other tee shot. 18, I knew if I had any kind of lead, I could play that hole however I wanted to, because I know it didn't fit my ball flight. But I at that point, I knew I wasn't going to have I didn't think I was going to have like a one shot lead or be tied. Like, but 15 was an awkward tee shot just because I like to cut it, and you have to kind of cut off the water. But it's like, if you double cross, you're in the water. But it's a pretty easy par five. And that was the best drive I hit all day. I didn't really drive drive it great on Sunday for sure. I drove it so down there. I left the tee. I'm just like, pimp step walking off the tee. Me and Joe start talking about Max Muncy hitting a home run. Like, we are so far removed from the nerves of this all of a sudden. And you just start feeling like, man, this is just fun. And yeah, I mean, like, you know, birdied 15. Now, I mean, it just started to be, you get to play the last three holes with almost, I mean, you have pressure, but like I aimed it right on 16, tried to fly the bunker. I missed it a little, and it just, you know, stays in the bunker, but I get to play that hole for kind of bogey. As long as I had a par putt, I've been happy. 17 hit not a bad, honestly, that's the other thing, like getting to play these holes like this, I didn't have to take on the pin. So I just missed it just right of the green, hit a mediocre but safe chip shot, make another great putt. And I'm sitting on 18 with 3 shot lead. And it's like, you can't possibly screw this up. So it was like, you know, all that goes into it, as hard as those holes are, that's why putts on 14 are so important. That's why birdies on 15 are so important. That's why 14 meant so much to me though, for real, is because it makes those last three holes so freaking easy. Because those are the hardest holes ever for sure. But like, I had to make bogey on all of them. Like, I can make, if you tell me I can make a five on all these holes, I'll make a five on all of them. But if I have to make a birdie on all of them, that's when you start making sixes and sevens, because you have to. I never had to take a shot on. And I pulled off the up and downs, and I pulled off the tee shot on 18. But like, the hole's hard, because when you're pressing to beat it, it's going to beat you.
What's so you win the Wells Fargo. Congrats, by the way.
Thanks, man.
Good
win. Pretty sweet. Wish I could watch it today.
Yeah, I know. I got GIFs. I got GIFs on my phone. If you want to watch them to you after. Great fist pump. Great reaction. One of the best. I mean, it's a reaction that made commercials, so you know it's a good reaction. You know, I mean, it was
doesn't
on
make the replay, but it makes commercials.
It can't make the replay, but
use
will,
me as
it will
advertisement.
Be.
We're gonna take a quick break and be right back.
We know what's happened since. I mean, you played some unbelievable golf in 2020, and I feel like you're at a place now where maybe that badass Max you were searching for when you were out on that golf course with Rory, you know, I'm a badass. I know I am. I know I've been my whole life. I feel like that guy's come out more in 2020 than maybe he has since college, and it's been fun to watch. What was the coolest surprise that comes with a victory, and what was the most random thing that you had to do now that you're a PGA Tour winner? I mean, if it might have been the day of, it might have been Sunday, you know, at Quail Hollow, or it might have been a few months later. But what was the coolest thing that happened from that victory?
It's just a whirlwind. I mean, just being able to experience like the press conference stuff that happens after, you're getting driven around by some cool police officer, you know, you're getting dropped off at like all these little things, you know.
Are you like cracking a beer on the way? Like, are you waiting? When do they give you a beer?
the tournament people were like feeding them to me as we went.
I did my first
press conference without it. And then as we're going, you know, you do a toast to the volunteers and to the members. I was filling mine up with beer, not with champagne. I'm just doing whatever I can to start drinking. I got to start celebrating. But you do a lot of stuff. You know, Joe does his toast. We do some Q&A stuff. But you're doing all this stuff, all these things. And it's like, this is really cool because you start to really appreciate so much more how many people are involved in a golf tournament. How many people it runs through. That's what makes me actually so sad about this tournament not being able to be played this year and to all the other ones, is I know how many people get excited for it and how many people put so much time and energy into it. But I finally got to see that. They treat you like a king. I mean, we sat in the locker room. I sat with Johnny Harris, who's like king of Charlotte, basically. And he's telling stories. We're talking about going to Augusta, playing me, him, and Joe. All this cool stuff. Signing like flags, drinking. And then I'm like, oh shoot, like all these things started to hit me. I'm like, dude, I got my bags, I don't have a place to stay, and I have to return my rental car tonight. They like return it for me, you know, like, you know, Joe drives me back to his house. I mean, it's,
you don't have
like,
to go to Avis.
I'm like I felt so different than I normally would feel. Like, it was just cool, and they were so nice, and it was also equally cool to see Joe got a trophy and like got just like a hero's welcome back to. All of it was sweet. Some of my friends, you know, Joel Stay gave me a big hug. Like, that's always, it's always, you know, fun to battle with your friends, but obviously one of you got to win, and you can't be luckier than I am to have a friend like Joel who is just so happy for you. And I would have been too, but I mean, he's just a stand-up dude. So getting to see him, he obviously goes and parties at Del Frisco's. I go back and try to get as drunk as I can as fast as I can. Didn't work. then fly back in the morning. So I don't know what the weirdest thing was. The press day you got to do for like interviews after you win, like the Tuesday you get home. I mean, my agent, it was probably the first time he actually had to like really work for me, because I never had any of this done. But he's texting me, you know, a full schedule of like, at 8 you got this, at 9 you got this, at 10 you got this. I mean, I went on with Jim Rome, went in the jungle or whatever, and it was wild. So there's stuff like that's the weird stuff you don't really think, you know, you don't think of that stuff. It's all odd.
You got to eat a TP on Wednesday.
We had TP on Wednesday, which is so fun, because then you go back and it's like, everyone's like, do you feel different? I'm like, nah, man. Like, I still think we're all like the same people. Like, I want to see my same friends.
Well,
golf at Phoenix.
We played Phoenix Country Club on Wednesday, and you and I had played Phoenix maybe 2 months prior. Nobody cared that you were there. No offense.
No offense.
There's dudes on the balcony taking cell phone photos of you on 10T.
But like, it could all change so fast. And I hope if there's a young kid or something sitting out there and he or she is trying to be a professional something or other, I swear to God, I will smack you emotionally if you ever become the person who gets some sort of, you know, accomplishes something and then turns on the people that are like that are their best friends. Because it's like, I've had so much more fun being friends with the same people. Like, we were talking about today in my group chat, I talk to you every day, where they were telling me where they were. Like, they still remember where they were when this happened. It's like, yeah, man, like, do you want to be friends with these new people who like didn't know all the stuff you went through? Like, that was fun. So, well, yeah, we go home and we do the same junk we always do. We go to TP and we play, you know, Phoenix. I mean, I don't know. It's easy. It's like, it's so, I don't know. That's the fun stuff, is like, not, you know, then you go back into a tournament just like you normally do, and then someone's going to win the next week, man, and you're no longer going to be the cool guy that just won. Like, you're right, going to be the guy who can't win a second time. It happens very, very fast.
I remember distinctly we teed off on 10 at Phoenix day. So this must have been Wednesday. You hit a good drive. You hit a okay second. You hit like 35 feet.
Yeah.
And you make it right in the middle, and you look at me and you go, Still
got it. That was kind of funny.
It was
golf
a nice
gets easy every once in a while.
The putter did not cool off on the flight back. You know what? We had a lot of stuff planned today for the podcast. I really enjoyed that. I loved it too.
Sorry for went long, but that was
I thought
cool.
It was
we
great.
Had so
I hope
golf for so long.
I hope people enjoy listening to it. I mean, I was on the edge of my new office chair seat because of this. I know. I didn't want to bring up this year. I didn't want to bring up the bummer of not being able to go back. And I know it's not going to be a Quail next year. It's a golf course that hosts big events. I can only assume that's got to be something you're excited about, because if and when you get a chance to play in a major or a team event or whatever there, it's going to be a place every time you get there, you're going to feel like you can play well at. I mean, it seems like I feel like that golf course, more than a lot on tour, it kind of picks the players that it wants to play well there. And, you know, you mentioned Rory's guy, Jason Day, JT, those guys have all played well there, but it's a golf course that you really, really like.
Yeah, I think it's like a big, it's a big ballpark. Par 71, you know, not kind of the modern day difficult golf course, not ultra demanding off the tee, but you sure as heck better be in the fairways, or at least with the right angles. You're going to hit a lot of long to medium iron or mid length irons. You know, obviously the green complexes are complex enough, interesting holes, but I feel like you get a lot of good winners for multiple reasons. One, you know, the staff does an unbelievable job at the tournament. Two, you know, the field is always good because of that, because they love the golf course. You're going to get these guys who go like a Rory, like a Justin Rose, like a Ricky Fowler, like, a, you know, Anthony Kim won there too, like where people want to go. And three, just because it is demanding. I feel like it's a golf course that you need to be on and very in you know, a lot of facets of your game. And in areas that I would say, you know, there's a lot of ways to be an elite player. I think the modern day elite player is a little bit longer off the tee, hits really high iron shots. That feels like kind of like the new norm. And so that golf course does kind of bring that out a little bit. And then, yeah, obviously when you get a field like they get every year, I mean, you're going to get the Rorys of the world, just like kind of coming back. Ricky always plays well. So you get that aspect too. So it's cool to do something on a golf course that has great champions and also has a great field every year. Cause you feel even in an odd way more accomplished, I guess, than, you know, when you get to play with Rory and win actual golf, like win a golf tournament. I mean, I'm taking a win anywhere in the world, but like that, I don't know. It felt more elevated in a weird way.
Yeah, the 2019 Wells Fargo is like the Lily White sessions of the replays. I don't know if we'll see it, but hopefully at one point we'll get a full replay
of it. It's apparently.
Yeah, I mean, you did an unbelievable job. I loved hearing you talk about it. We did a regripped, our second regripped. We did the 06 U.S. Open on Saturday, this past Saturday. Wingfoot, crazy to watch the end. We're gonna do a Women's U.S. Open on this coming Saturday. That's 3 p.m. What time? 3 p.m.
EDT.
EDT, so noon if you're on the best coast, and that will be the 05 U.S. Women's Open. And the hope is, fingers crossed, that Morgan Pressel is going to jump in and join us for a little
bit.
Of course,
sick.
She was in the fairway when all that went down there at Cherry Hill. So that'll be fun. We're going to keep those going. We got a couple more left after. And then, Max, obviously, you're going to be grinding. You know what? When you won last year, buddy, a big moment in your life, huge moment in your career, I bet at some point that Sunday night, you thought, in a year, I'm going to get a chance to do a podcast about my win and then play in a money game for $35 the Monday after in 2020. Because that's what you're doing, man. This is what
it's
happens.
It's crazy how just dreams do come true.
You know what? If you get a chance to play with Ashton Woods on a Monday, you got to take
it. I'm stoked
on it. And that's what Max is going to do it. Anything you got, buddy? Anything you got coming up or anything you want to send out there to the peeps?
No, I mean, I feel like I've been getting a lot. Life's been feeling a little more normal. I feel like people are starting to embrace the positivity. We're going to be all right. I'm getting excited for golf, working really hard back at the game. So it feels good to be a person again. I hope everybody else is getting in that same feeling, because it sure does. I missed it, man. I missed being
life.
A human.
Yeah, yeah, I missed life for sure. Follow Max on social media. You can follow him at MaxHoma23 on Twitter or at Max.Homa. The man that doesn't like Instagram is now an Instagram
king. IG.
He is all over Instagram.
Not king.
If you like the podcast, do us a favor, rate and review it. It really helps. It helps us in terms of sponsors possibly jumping on. Hey, Aon, what up?
What up?
If you're thinking about it, we're right here.
We haven't left, guys. See the reward.
I love that.
Right?
What are you doing? That's episode 15. Appreciate you guys listening.
Wash your hands.
Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.